Sam Stovall is Chief Investment Strategist for Standard & Poor's Capital IQ. He's also a member of the S&P Investment Policy Committee, where he focuses on market history and valuations, as well as sector and industry recommendations. Of course, I have had Sam on our show many, many times, and as I was saying to him off air, hey, Sam, how come we only have you when the market's getting a little funky? Let me welcome him back. Sam, great to have you back on the show.
Steve, I'm happy to be back anytime.
Yeah, so you said that, you know, had the quarter ended on September 18th when the S&P 500 recorded another all-time high, the next few weeks were like a complete reverse image of that. What's going on?
Well, I think what's happened is that unquantifiable worries have taken over investors' mindset. I called it an alphabet soup of concerns because you had C for China, you know, would Beijing be doing something to offset the protests in Hong Kong, D for the dollar, the strengthening dollar, just crushing commodities, oil, gold in particular, E for Ebola and the worries about spreading that around the globe and the impact specifically on airlines, and then F, the Fed. You know, when will the Fed start to raise rates, and as a result, what kind of an impact that would have on the markets? But I think today we're realizing, meaning as we are entering into October, we are realizing that a lot of these unquantifiable concerns can really be offset by a lot of these solid fundamental underpinnings of the economy as well as upcoming third quarter earnings.
Wow, that's extremely well said. So let's just take some of those items one by one. So I guess the market hates uncertainty. So what's going on in Hong Kong represents this uncertainty. Nobody knows if it's going to escalate to another Tiananmen Square, and then that could somehow affect the growth engine that is China. Now, the dollar has been rising, and for me, who likes to go to Europe from time to time, this is a good thing, but it also makes American manufacturing prices less competitive, right?
Yes, they do. So in the short term, the dollar might just end up being an interesting trading opportunity where you want to be moving out of those that are adversely affected by the dollar, specifically the two asset classes with the steepest negative correlation to the dollar are gold and oil. Those with positive correlations, well, we've been seeing large cap U.S. stocks do a lot better relatively than small cap issues. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, that's what's happened because you figure that it's the overseas investors who are coming to America to buy into American shares, pushing up the value of the dollar.
Right.
They're going to gravitate to the more liquid, more well-known large-cap names at the expense of the smaller-cap names.
Now, that's interesting, because occasionally we hear the story that a declining dollar is good for those big U.S. large-caps because they do so much business overseas. It means that their products become more competitive. I wanted to get back to this gold and oil thing. So when the dollar is rising, it's bad for gold and oil. And what I want to ask you is, on the oil side, we're just talking about oil companies, or are we talking about service companies? Are we talking about those companies that are in the construction business, creating terminals and LNG, you know, liquid natural gas facilities and the like? Is it the whole complex of oil that's going to get hurt here?
Well, the whole complex does get hurt when you think about energy as a sector, predominantly because it is dominated by the large integrated companies such as Exxon and Chevron, which mm-hmm. have an awful lot of what's called downstream activities. Basically, you know, if the price of oil goes down, then that's going to benefit the downstream, that which is closest to the consumer. If the price goes up, however, then prices are going to be benefiting the upstream or those that are closest to the well site. So some of the companies in oil and gas exploration and production are acting a little bit better than those that are in storage as well as transportation.
Now, that's interesting. Let's get to the Fed. Now, the Fed has been tapering a little bit for a while. In your mind, does that amount to a tightening of monetary policy, which is always, if it happens long enough, it very often leads to recession? Would you consider this taper a tightening?
No, I wouldn't regard it as a tightening because we are basically just getting back to the more long-term relationship between what the Fed wants to do and the economy itself. Of course, it will end up slowing economic growth because, use the analogy of a driver, with the Fed priming the pump by adding liquidity through its quantitative easing programs, that's like a driver putting his foot on the gas.
Mm-hmm.
If you are tightening, it's putting your foot on the brake. With tapering, it's simply taking your foot off the gas.
Right.
And either way, the car is going to slow.
Yeah. And so there is some risk there because, to use another metaphor, perhaps, this idea of the U.S. economy being this huge ship where that is, you know, slowly turning, it may be imperceptible at first, but eventually over time, you know, the ship will turn directions. And I guess that's what everybody's trying to look for. I noticed that the markets have become more volatile again. Is that an indication of anything or just a mirror of the uncertainty that we're all feeling?
I think it's a mirror of the uncertainty, plus it's reversion to the mean. What I say by that is, if you look back over the very long period, going back to 1960, in any rolling 12-month period, we would have 60 days per year in which the market experienced an up or down move by 1%. In the past year, however, we've really only seen about 40 such days. So we are experiencing less volatility than long-term indicators would show. And even going back to 2000, we've had twice as much volatility on average as we have in the past 12 months. So really, we're just getting back to normal, but it's not like seismic activity. It's not like trying to forecast an erupting volcano. An increase in little earthquakes does not necessarily mean that the top is going to blow.
I think it's important that people get shook up a little bit too, because there's this sense of comfort and ease and that investing is easy and all you have to do is buy index funds and, you know, not worry so much about the volatility because the volatility has been very low. You know, it's like the parable of the frog in the frying pan where the heat is turned up ever so slightly. The frog doesn't actually realize it's being cooked until, boom, at the last minute, dead. Frog, you know?
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a riveting story.
Yeah. So I like to see investors, you know, climb this wall of worry because investing isn't easy and volatility is part of the process. So I don't want you to get lulled into thinking that, you know, that things are going to stay like this for much longer. What do you see going forward for the fourth quarter? I know you don't predict, but historically speaking, we're in midterm elections. And the economy seems to be doing well. Last Friday, we had an unemployment numbers that unemployment went down. Job numbers are looking good again in the U.S. What does this quarter look like to you?
Well, historically, the quarter ends up being very strong, the best of all four quarters. Average increase since 1990 was a gain of 5%. The second best quarter was Q2 at less than half of that gain. In the fourth quarter, on average, we have all 10 sectors post average increases in price. So what's happening in October really is fairly normal. Increase in volatility, increase in concern that we're going to experience some sort of a big sell-off like we did in 87 or back in 1929. But that's good. We need a high wall of worry for the markets to continue to rise. So if history repeats itself, and there's no guarantee it will, I would say be prepared for a nice quarter.
I think it was Will Rogers that said that October, maybe it was Mark Twain, October was a particularly terrible month or difficult month in which to invest. And other difficult months are January, February, March, April, May, June, July. So, you know, any clue as to, which we haven't really seen very much of in the last few years, but there was a time when October was a particularly devastating month. Any historical clue as to what that was?
Oh, absolutely. October is typically regarded as a bear killer month, meaning that 5 of the last 10 bear markets ended in October.
Mm.
The most recent near bear market ended in October. Also, we had near bear markets in 1998, 1978 that concluded in October. And so usually a bear market demise ends up with a capitulation sell-off, which really freaks out investors.
Yeah.
So that's why they worry about October. They remember 1987. They remember reading about 1927. And so that's why the old saying of sell in May and go away lasts until the end of October.
Mm-hmm.
And on average, the strongest 6 months are November through April, mainly because investors say, you know what, even though October really on the whole is not that bad of a month, I think I just want to stay on the sidelines and watch all of this craziness evaporate.
My guest is Sam Stovall. He is the chief investment strategist for Standard & Poor's Capital IQ. And we're discussing this last few weeks or months in the marketplace, and we're trying to look ahead a little bit. Sam, I know you follow the sectors of the S&P from energy to financials to utilities. Are we seeing any clue as to perhaps which of the next sectors may take us out of this current malaise?
Well, what we're seeing is a continued strength in healthcare and technology, which have been very strong performers for all of this year. We're starting to see an improvement in consumer discretionary, which I think is positive because that implies that the consumer is feeling a little bit better about how they stand in this economic recovery and are more willing to open up their pocketbooks. I think also that we're seeing a little bit better performance in the financials, which is helpful, and as a result, seeing weakness in the more defensive areas. So that implies to me that the bull market still has legs, and we could see the cyclical sectors take a leadership role once again.
Very interesting. Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist, Standard & Poor's Capital IQ. As always, Sam, it's always a pleasure. We get it straight from you without any, waffling, just straight ahead information, which helps us all. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Steve.